a guten Vach, a guten Mayed, and a guten Kvitzel to everybody. I want to thank Dr. Huberfeld for sponsoring today's beautiful breakfast. It's wonderful to see so many people in a sukkah learning together after a very special davening on all the minyanim, the respective minyanim. Our learning today will be Le'ilu Nishmas, Rabbi Avram Tzvi ben Shalom, Dr. Huberfeld's grandfather, whose yahrzeit is on Simchas Torah. Simchas Torah, thank you very much for enabling this learning and this get-together. To me, the day of Hoshana Rabbah has always been a confusing one. Partly because there's not much written about Hoshana Rabbah. And not only is that confusing in the sense of we don't know that much about it, but it's strange that such a day, which is so powerful, as many of the sources talk about, that it's so hidden. Meaning, if today is such an important day, then you'd expect there to be an incredible dearth of literature, of writing, of talking about it, and it's very, very hidden. It's very unknown. So what I'd like to do is just very briefly explore with you some of the ideas which I found, which I think are exceptionally meaningful in terms of understanding and appreciating what we're doing on this very unusual and very powerful day. In the Mishnah and the Gemara, very little is actually said about today in terms of the Day of Judgment. As you know, we used Yom Kippur Nigunim, we added Noira into the, when we were taking out the Sefer Torah. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch says that their minag is to say Shema Yisrael like we do on Yom Kippur, meaning to say, and the Mishnah explains, with the Nigun, meaning to say we're supposed to be experiencing a Yom Kippur-like day. But the Mishnah doesn't talk about that. The most we know about today, the most that we're given in the Mishnah is the following. The Mishnah tells us in Sukkah that it's found on Membeis Amud Beis, the first source. Lulav v'arava shisha v'shiva. The mitzvah of Lulav and Arava were 6 and 7 days, and this is referring to in the Migdash. In the base of Migdash, they would shake the Lulav, and they would shake or use, that's used for a general, more general term, v'arava 7 days. That's very much all we know about this. Now, the Mishnah goes on, a few Mishnahs later, to explain what's going on. There's actually a special ceremony. So the Mishnah tells us on Mem Heyam of Aleph, Mishnah, Mitzvah Sarava Ketzad. What was the Mitzvah of Arava? Meaning, we're very familiar with Lulav, right? We spend a lot of time on Lulav. What's the Mitzvah of Arava? Mokom Hoy Olamatim Yerushalayim V'nikra Moitza. There's a place outside Yerushalayim called Moitza today. When you're driving to Yerushalayim, as you come down the valley, there's that's called Moitza, there's Moitza on Beit Zayitz, which is really on the side of the highway. It's actually there. There's a lot of interesting archaeological remains in that area. Yordin Lishon Melaktin Mishon Moravios Shalarava. Rabbein Vizokvin Osa Bitsidem is Beth. So what they would do is they would take the willow trees there in the valley, probably presumably because there was a water flow as well, and the willows are by the water, and they would go and get the Aravos, and they'd bring them up to the Mizbeach. Roshan Kufufin Agabi Mizbeach. And they would put these Aravos. Now, we're not talking about the Aravos that we have today. Our Aravos are, you know, so high. We're talking about, the Gemara says, even 11 Amos, that they would be put on the ground, and they would go up the side of the Mizbeach with their heads resting on the Mizbeach. So we're talking about really long. You know, we're talking about the regular weeping willow branches from top to bottom. They would take those all, they would take them, and they would put them, and they would lean on the Mizbeach all the way around it. Taku v'heri of a taku, they would blow the shofar with the tekiah on both sides and the trua in the middle. B'chol yom makifinis ab mizbeach pamachas, and they would surround the mizbeach one time every day of Sukkos. V'omrim ona Hashem Oshiyana, ona Hashem Atzlichona, and they would say these prayers to Hashem that we say in our Hallel. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ani v'hoi Hoshiyana, which is obviously you're seeing the originations of what our Shanas are about to be. And v'osa yom makifinis ab mizbeach sheva pamim. And that day they would do it 7 days. By the way, in Tanakh, just to throw it out, where else do we have that pattern? 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, and then 7 on the 7. Yericho. It's interesting. This is the pattern of the first conquest of Israel, right? It's interesting that this is the Jericho model, and one has to think why this is set up in such a way as well. And Peshas Petiroson, as they were leaving Mahayan Oinrin, Yofilach Mizbeach, Yofilach Mizbeach, they would say, how beautiful you are, altar. Rebbe Lozo Omer, Omer Levaloch Mizbeach, Levaloch Mizbeach. They would say these praises as they're leaving. It's interesting to me that the Meseches Sukkah as a whole, the Gemara concludes with which story? Is the story of Bas Bilga, who denigrates the Mizbeach. It's interesting because Sukkah almost ends, the whole Sukkah ends with the praising of the Mizbeach. It's interesting, the Masechta sort of ends on the flip side of perhaps that's why it was so bad. This is what we know. This is what we know about it. So what's special about the seventh day of Sukkot, which is the day we're on, is it was the day in which we encircled the Mizbeach seven times. From the Mishnah, it's not clear what you're circling it with. Meaning, right, the Mishnah just tells us, Makifin es ha-Mizbeach, that we'd go around to do ha-kofa seven times. With what? Right, meaning, what, not so clear in the Mishnah what we are doing. There's a machlokes in fact to the Gemara if those hakovas were done with the arava or with the lulav. Not clear. We paskin actually, the Rambam paskins with the lulav, which is why we do it as such. Now, the Rambam explains, just before we get here, so how does it translate to us? Meaning, this is the mission, this is what the Gemara, and with a little bit of the added aspects of the Gemara, but what does that mean to us? Meaning, so what about us today? This is all about the Beis HaMikdash. What do we do today? So we go around Bimah with the lulav, but the most we do with our rova is we hold it, and we wave it a little bit, and we hit it on the ground, and we only do it on Hoshana Rabbah. If that's true, if you think about this for a moment, the Mishnah told us that how many days would they use the Arava in the Beis HaMikdash?
Six or seven,
right? The six was because if there was a Shabbos on a regular day, unless Shabbos was on the seventh day, then they would do it despite Shabbos. But in the end of the day, in the Mikdash, they would use the Lulav and Esrog and the Arava all 7 days. What translates into us, into a post-Mikdash reality is, the first day is Midaraisa by Lulav, the next 6 days or 5 days in Chutz Aretz are a Zeichel Mikdash. We don't do a Zeichel Mikdash of Arava. You notice that? We only do a Zeichel Mikdash. When we hold the Arava this morning, we only do the Zeichel Mikdash of the Arava on Hoshana Rabbah. Right? The reason the Gemara explains is because being as Arava isn't a mitzvah midaraisa, it doesn't tell us to do it in the Torah. It's actually a minhag neviim, as it comes out in the end of the Gemara. It's a minhag neviim, and therefore, because it's a minhag, it translates into a smaller zecher, which is the zecher we did this morning, which was specifically for the Arava. And that's how it expresses itself. The Rambam adds in a few extra details, which are important over here. He said, just in the second paragraph in Source 3, this is the Rambam in Hilchos Lulav Perek Zayin, he says, Ketzal ha-yam mitzvah, so b'chol yam v'yam mishivas ha-yamim, ha-yam v'yin murviyos shal ha-rova v'zoik v'noi sal tzir ha-mizbeach v'roshen k'fuf in ha-mizbeach. He's quoting the Mishnah, that placed these huge arovas onto the sides of the mizbeach, v'eis shahayim v'yin oisan, oisan v'sojin oisan v'toikin ha-mariyam v'toikin, that blow the shofar, chal yam shabbos liyos b'sach ha-chag, ein zoik v'na rova, elim kein chal yam ha-shvi liyos b'shabbos, zoik v'noisan b'shabbos k'day l'pir samashu mitzvah. If it was Shabbos on a regular day, you wouldn't do this, unless it was the seventh day like today. If Hoshana Rabbah fell on Shabbos, which it could in those days, then you would still do it on that day. And what do they do? They would take in these golden basins, they would place the Aravos, if it was on a Shabbos, Hoshana Rabbah was on Shabbos. And now this is the interesting part that the Rambam is adding is, they wouldn't just put it on the Mizbeach. After it was on the Mizbeach, the people would come and take it off the Mizbeach and then walk around. So the Rambam is adding to us what was happening in the ceremony. The Machloika says that whether the Ikar Mitzvah was placing it or actually taking it and circling. Fascinating. And the Arizaykir is as what we have today. That's what we know in the Mishnah. The problem is that that's not where it ends. Right? That's not what our Hoshana Rabbah is so much about. That happens to be a detail of our Hoshana Rabbah. Our Hoshana Rabbah actually stems more from the Kabbalistic side of the fence. And that is to be found in the Zohar. The Zohar is famously quoted, and I actually was able to find this section which talks about this. Let's start in Source 4 in the Zohar Pashas Tzav. The Zohar says, let's start the second line. It says, the third word, Debezimno da on this time of Vorech Lechol Shasa, Biyuma de Shavias or de Chag. That this day is the blessing through the rest of the year. On the seventh day of the Chag, which refers to Sukkos, Husiyuma de Dina da Alma. It is the end of the, it's the conclusion of the judgment process of the world. Notice, by the way, da Alma, not the Jews, right? This is the judgment of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is universal. So that universal judgment's continuing. Upiskin nafkin mi bay malka, and the petek, right? That's what we say petek tov or good acquittal, is based on the Zohar over here. Is that the signed document is released from the bay malka on this day. Uguvri misari umistaimin bahay yuma uva arve nachal bahayin uva inon liyisara guvurin demayon Yeah, Lemaya, and it goes on to explain how this relates to Yitzchak Avinu, and that's how we elevate the waters at this time. And the Zohar continues to explain the importance of this. Now, what's fascinating is it's never talked about beforehand, right? Meaning, this concept seems to be suddenly appearing in the Zohar, attributed to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, but revealed much, much later, expressly and explicitly. It's almost like a whole section of history wasn't informed, it sounds like, of this. So what's happening over here? Moreover, you'll see very interesting statements made by, let's say, this is an example. The Ramban says the following. This is an unbelievable statement. This is, and it makes it la halacha. By the Meraglim, it says that, referring to the Meraglim, it says, Sar tzilom me'alehem. Their shadows have disappeared in Source 5. Their shadows disappeared. So what does that mean? Says the Ramban, an unbelievable point. I just put in the bigger words, the section that we're going to... that we're going to focus on. The first part, the Ramban says, Al-Derech Pshat, that they've lost their strength. He says, Aval, Yitochen Shiyirmo Zakosov, says the Ramban. You know what it's talking about over here? Lemasha Noida, that which is known, right? Which is known. Okay, so the Ramban's talking already now. Talking about 800 years ago, he's saying, this is known. Ki Beleil HaChoysam, on the night of the signing, Lo Yiyeh Tzel L'Roish HaIsh Asher Yomus Bashana Ahi. There won't be a shadow to a person who's going to Rachmana Litzal not make it through that year. Meaning to say, they no longer have a shadow. This is, you know, Peter Pan must have got it somehow from here. Is that that their shadows have disappeared? Meaning to say that they're walking dead people. That's what the Torah is telling us about those people. Therefore, don't fear them. Now, this is referring to the people, the inhabitants of Israel. Of Canaan. Now, this you may think is, you know, this sounds very strange. If you open up the Shulchan Aruch, the beginning of Hilchos Hashana Rabbah, the Ramah brings this down. The Ramah brings that there are people who say that on the night of Hashana Rabbah, that's why we're discussing it in the morning, is that on the night of Hashana Rabbah, that if a person doesn't see their shadow in the light of the moon, they know that there's something bad's going to happen to them or their families. And then the Shulchan Aruch says, and that's based on this Noida, comment on the Ramban, and then the Ramah says, but it's not a good idea to play this game because, first of all, we don't know all the details of how this works. Certainly, on a night where you have an overcast night, so the Ramah concludes, "Tomim tiyeh Hashem lakecha," you know, play straight, play clear. You know, don't try to work out the asidos. Do what you got to do here in this world. Nonetheless, you see the power of this. Meaning, already that statement of the Ramban is translating it into halacha. This Zohar about the idea and the notion of this being like the end of the judgment is translated into the way we actually daven, the nigunim and the nusach of what we're davening on this day. But nonetheless, it doesn't appear earlier. Or does it? Or does it? That's the question. Does it appear earlier? So there's a lot of very, very fascinating things to talk about in this direction. But perhaps the one place to start thinking is that maybe the Mishnah does talk about it. Think about this. We know the following. We know that Rosh Hashanah is the Rosh Hashanah for what? For all humanity. All humanity stands in front of God, Kivnei Moron. That's what the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah says. But that's not the only Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnah Rosh Hashanah on Tes Zayin Amud Aleph says the following in Source 6. Ba'arba prakim ha'olam nidon. There are four different sections. We'll call this the departmental budget. Right? The general budget for humankind is set on Rosh Hashanah. There's four departmental budgets which are set throughout the year. But Pesach ala Tzvua, on Pesach, the way that the produce is going to come out, because remember, in the northern hemisphere, that's when everything's starting to sprout. So how that's going to turn out is judged on Pesach. Ba'atzeres, on Shavua, is ala Peiros Ilan, on the fruits of the tree, because remember, that's a later bloom. Barash Hashanah, kol boya olam avrin lefonov, kenekiv neymor, on shenemar, yotze yachal, iba, on amevin, kol ma'aseyem. And the last part of the Mishnah is, uvachag, referring to Sukkos, nidoinin ala mayim. Because in most countries, or in a lot of countries in the Northern Hemisphere, the rain cycle is in the winter, which is starting now, which is why we say in Shmini Atzeres, St. Talmud Matar, starting tomorrow.
That's what
the
Zohar means.
Maybe, instead of seeing it as suddenly something which appears in the Zohar, if you think carefully about this, ultimately, rain and water doesn't just mean rain and water. Let's think about what this means as well. It also means, you know, Wakim, going out to sea. It also means to say that when inflation is affected by the agricultural cycle in the Midwest, because there wasn't enough rain like 2 years ago, and prices are going up, which affects the prices of other goods, that's also part of what that is. Geshem also is not just referring to physical rain. Geshem also refers to the way that our sustenance in a certain, the place where our sustenance originates, before it even gets to the Tefuah, before it even gets to the Paras HaIlan.
So,
right, so we're talking about a very deep idea over here of what this water is meant to represent, as Deb is pointing out. So what's going on over here is a very interesting thing. Although it's true that the humankind is judged, it sounds like the element of water is held over till the end of Chag. When's the end of Chag?
Now.
Right, Shemini Atzeres isn't part of Chag. Shemini Atzeres tonight isn't part of Sukkos. Today is the last day of that. So ultimately, if you actually read the Mishnah very carefully, that statement in the Zohar, perhaps, is stemming from this Rosh Hashanah itself. Isn't that interesting? But it goes perhaps even a little further than that. Just as a beautiful connection between how the Arava relates to that exactly, the Emunah Sitecha Rav Wolfson says the most unbelievable comment relating to what we just did. He says, Ha'arava meramezes al Yisrael. The Arava, our willow branch, relates to Israel. Shebematzav shofel kesha'en bohem loy tam v'loy reach. In a situation where we don't have any taste or smell, v'lo nishar lohem elo tefila k'oni bepesach upona el tefilas ha'ir irur v'lo bozo es tefilasam. That all we have is our tefila. You know, I think, to me, like, you know, just like reading the news in the last week, you know, when you look at, you know, when you see a Mahmoud Abbas get up in the UN and say that we're no longer bound by any of the agreements because of Israel's aggression. And when Netanyahu gets up in front of the UN and says, you know, there's been more people killed in Syria than in the last year, than there have been in the whole entire Israeli-Palestinian conflict in its entire time in the last 100 years, but there's been 20 resolutions against Israel and one against Syria, and nobody's listening, and people are being killed on our streets. You think to a moment, you feel how there's a hopelessness. What can you possibly do to convince the world of the truth which is staring them in the face? We're at a very, very low point. However, over Yom HaArava, on that day of Arava, Choyf Tines Arava al Garik Harka b'chinas shachal ofer nafshenu, dovkal aretz bitneinu, that we bash that Arava, meaning we don't have anything to offer, we don't have the time for reach, and we break it even further. That's our state. The takef, koma izrosa lonu kishamagiyana b'chinas nifla v'loy soysif, os takef kume b'solas Yisrael. That the lowest point is where we raise it up. Right, this is a pasuk in Amos, Nofla Besulas Yisrael Lo Soysif Kum. That's the reason why we don't have the Nun in Ashrei, because we don't have the word Noifel in Ashrei based on this pasuk, where Amos says that we will fall and not be able to get up again. That's why we omit the Nun. It's related to the word Noifel intrinsically. And how, nonetheless, at the lowest point, we pick it up. We take that and we put it on the highest point on the shul. Meaning to say, from the lowest point, we're able to ascend to the highest. And it goes into a Kabbalistic notion of what Atara Labala means. But perhaps that's part of the end of the judgment is seen through the perspective of the Arava, which is really essentially the metaphoric existence of Israel. To drive this in one step further, this is a section which I've only seen quoted once before, and I think most people are unaware of this most beautiful, beautiful MS Liak, Reuako Kamenetsky. He addresses the question, which is that, you know, Lamaisa, it seems like nobody was really talking about Hoshana Rabbah before the Zohar. Meaning, it's true that in the Mishnah, if you were to read the Mishnah carefully, it was there. But it doesn't seem like people were talking about this. You don't see the Halachas Sforim talking about this. You don't see people talking about Hoshana Rabbah the way that we talk about it today up till then. So he was asked that question. He was asked exactly that question. And listen to the beauty of perhaps what he explains in this day. He says, and this is to be found in Parashas Emor. He's talking about Yom Kippur. That's why it's very unknown and hidden away. He says, Ma'ashkofa zu navin oid inyan amok. I want to tell you a deep idea. Hinei, hikshali arav, Rabbi Kalman Epstein, right? So Rav Kalman was a Rabbi in, if I'm not mistaken, Rosh Hashiva in Shara Torah in Queens. B'shem Chacham Echad, Heyach Yitochin Shoshana Rabbah, Shu Yom Chosum Adin Belechol Olam Kulay Vuhu Karav Lo Yom Adin Shal Rosh Hashanah V'Yom Kippurim. You're telling me Hashanah Rav has got this elevated status like Rosh Hashanah V'Yom Kippur, V'Chazal Lo Yizkiru Ezeh Lo Be'Bavli V'Lo Be'Yerushalmi. And the whole Bavli leaves it out, and the Yerushalmi leaves it out, by the way. In the footnote there, he points out that, yes, there is Yerushalmi which hints to it. But in general, what it means to say is that it's not explicit. We know that the minhag, as we learnt, is that you come to the shul and you break the arava. We never knew about this until the Zohar. Right, he says, how could they hide this from us? And he puts it in parentheses, Hirgashti b'kusha zu, kusha shel kantur b'kenega direi Zohar. I felt that there was a bit of a question on the Zohar as a whole. It wasn't just about Hashanah Rabbah, but the question is, you know, where's the Zohar coming from at all? So he says the following, this is, and he brings a halachic model, which is most beautiful. I'm going to explain to you something about the methodology of Chazal. Matzino, this is a mission in Shabbos. She'echodat me'atakonos shel Shama v'Hillel. Remember, Shama and Hillel were the leaders of the generation that were the fifth level of Zugois, the Nosin Av Beis Din of Israel, towards the end of the Second Temple time, and they made a number of takonos. So one of them was she'ein korin le'oraner. On Shabbos, you can't read to the light of a candle. If you have lamps, that's fine. You can't read to the light of a candle. V'atam de'gazinon she'miyovo lahatos esaner. What's the problem? Candlelight is never good enough. And we talk about the lamps that we had oil in. So what you do is you tip it so the oil come to the front, and in this way you'll be over on an aspect of Shabbos, of Havora. V'ine, nichsi anon. So he asks a very simple question. Where did the takana come from? Let's do a survey. We're going to drop off a survey at everybody's house in Israel in the times of Hillel and Shammai, Second Temple reign. We're going to ask everyone to fill in the survey and work out, you know, the percentage of people who are reading and tipping their candles. And we'll make it an anonymous survey so nobody has to feel embarrassed. So we'll find out that there's a certain number of people who do it. So let's say that there was a critical mass of people who actually did do this, and they were tipping their candles. So then Hillel and Shammai were late in the game. It should have been Anshei Knesset HaGdolah much earlier on, when they were writing, and Anshei Knesset HaGdolah made many takonos. So they should have realized that there's a critical mass. They should have made the takona early on. And if you're going to say, no, there wasn't a critical mass, then why are they doing it now? Meaning, what did Hillel and Shammai, why were they suddenly becoming more machmir? Right? The numbers didn't change. There were lamps, and lamps were for many, many generations, and people were reading. So what changed? Say, very, very interesting question. He says, and he goes on to the following. I said to explain the following. We know that on Yom Kippur, you can read by the light of a candle, even if Yom Kippur, like last year, was on a Friday night. Shabbos doesn't supersede Yom Kippur. Why not? Because Yom Kippur is a very intense day. You're thinking about yourself. You're being very careful. You're not going to make a mistake even on Shabbos if you need to read. We know that in some regards, Shabbos does have a certain fear on it. So for instance, if you ask a fellow, you bought the demai from, whether the mice was taken from it, you can believe him because on Shabbos he'll tell you the truth. So there is an element of emas Shabbos, but it doesn't translate into the candle, only on Yom Kippur. Earlier on, they realized there was a certain prevalent fear on Shabbos, which is why people would tell the truth about their miser, and therefore they were relied on that. Like Yom Kippur, Aval, Shama v'Hillel, Rois Yiridas Ador, She'emas Shabbos Eino Kolkach, V'lekach Omdu V'tiknu Shlo Yikron Oraner Shema Yate. They realized as the generations were going on, that Eima, what was changing? The numbers weren't changing, the books weren't changing, they weren't getting backlit tablets, they were the candle technology wasn't changing. What was changing? The Eimas Shabbos was changing. So therefore they realized that in the perspective of Shabbos, that subconscious fear in the background was disappearing. So therefore they made the takana. Says similarly Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, perhaps this is why they hid it. If we were to know that today in fact is such a serious day, and everything of our year depends on really what's going to happen at the Chisum, people are not going to have fun. They're not going to be enriched. They're going to be fearful like Yom Kippur on the seventh day of Chag. Those people could read their Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah and realize, wait a second, today is the last day of the Chag, and they realize what's going on. They get it. But we're not going to put it into writing. What could, in a certain sense, because of the sensitivity of people, transform Sukkot not to be a Chag Simchaseinu, but to be a Chag of terror. Because the continued din, ukumay shamru chazal shesham kol membeis oisios and moistin oisayel lemishet sanu avonav. We don't give the 42 name of Hashem to except to certain people who are very humble. Kumoy kain nosru lohem tivoy shaloshan rabba valolo vayu meraktin besimchas beis hashayva alpi sheyodu es tivayom. The people who really knew still danced because they were able to refocus. V'kach nimshach adava al korv l'soif o'elev ha'chamishi until end of 5,000 years. When was the end of 5,000 years? The year 1240, just in case you can counting, right? That's when the year 5,000 hit. In that time, yordu adoros, there was a drop in the generations. V'ro chach me'ador, sh'av sh'yodu shu yom adin lo'y sifra simchas ha'chag v'nei she'ein emas adin meruba kolkach v'oz gilu es ha'emes ayideh zara kodosh. So they released the secret more publicly of Hashanah Rabbah because they realized that unfortunately to us, the Emas Adin isn't so intense that it would in fact be a contradiction. So we live in this funny relationship where we're able to experience Sukkot and we're able to experience Hashanah Rabbah. And unfortunately, it isn't a stira, but nonetheless, it's something which we're able to experience together, which is why perhaps in terms of the historical or the spiritual history of this day, it was released at that particular time. Nonetheless, what I hope that what we've learned a little bit today is perhaps the connections between what was an ancient custom of the Arava, how it translates in the Kabbalistic idea to the end of that din, and how that perhaps is the end of the Simcha of the Mayim. And most interestingly, historically, why it is that today specifically was revealed at a much later point in history, which also relates to like Bo Omer in a certain sense as well, in the same kind of notion. I hope that, Mitzvah Hashem, that we should be able to utilize this day as we have to all be written, to be signed to a Piska Toiva for a year ahead of health, of wealth, of happiness and growth. I'm not the best.